360's The Week That Was, the most listened to hour in Territory Radio. The Territory leaders break down this week's big issues.
And it is Friday morning. It is time for The Week That Was, proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions. And joining us in the studio this morning, the opposition leader, Leah Finocchiaro. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Katie?
Yes,
good morning,
very
listeners.
Well. And we've also got Terry Mills, the Territory Alliance leader. Good morning.
Good morning, Katie.
We've got Natasha Files, the Attorney General. Hi, Filesy.
Morning, Wolfie.
And we've got Matt Cunningham from Sky News. Good morning, Matt.
Morning, Katie.
It sounds like I'm a school teacher saying good morning to everyone.
Good morning, Miss Wolf.
And at my school, good morning, Miss Wolf, and may God bless you.
Yes.
Was what I used to have to say. Now, we will get straight into it, no doubt. A busy morning it's going to be. And let's kick things off with the fact that the borders are going to be opening on July 17. We know that the Chief Minister, Michael Gunner, says that the Northern Territory's borders will reopen on July 17, and he's ruled out any possibility of establishing a travel bubble with other states before then. He made the announcement yesterday and had said that he's received medical advice that community transmission down south is now tracking at an acceptable risk level. And based on the evidence, our Chief Health Officer recommends a 28-day assessment period before opening our borders, which is two COVID-19 replication cycles. Look, I think that it's no doubt there's going to be mixed feelings amongst the community, but I think that the majority of people, from the feedback that I've had, is that the majority of people are happy that the borders are opening. Some are wondering why they're not opening sooner to some of those safer states.
I think it's definitely good news that we have a date. It's something that a lot of people have been putting a lot of pressure on the Gunner government about. The tourism and hospitality sectors in particular need certainty around a date. What's most disappointing about 17 July, though, is the fact that it misses the school holidays and misses a lot of the dry season. Some data came out that shows that in the Territory, we lose $3 million and 20 jobs a day in the tourism sector for every day that our borders are closed. Now, that is significant. Territorians are hurting. Many thousands have lost their jobs. Over 10,000 are currently actively looking for work. And so it's very important to ensure that we do everything we can to safely reopen our borders so that we can get commerce happening here in the Territory.
Katie, this is a once-in-a-century health crisis, a pandemic that's caused intern and economic crisis. We absolutely understand those Territory businesses that are doing it tough, but we can't undo the good position that we're in now. We need to listen to that clinical advice. We have a situation in South Australia where they've created a travel bubble, but they're still not able to go to the club and play a game of pool, or they can't gather in larger groups. So this is complex, but it is promising what is happening Australia-wide. We've seen New South Wales hasn't had community transmission. They're still having cases, but they are very isolated in that community transmission. Victoria, for example, just a couple of days ago had 21 cases. 15 of them were international travellers returning, and 6 of them were community cases around a couple of suburbs. So it's certainly promising for Australia when you look at what's happened around the world from this pandemic.
Can I just say, Natasha, I have to call you out. Sorry, Terry, I have to call you out. Your government cannot look Territorians in the eye and say that the health crisis caused the economic crisis. Your government caused the economic crisis. It has been exacerbated by COVID-19. You need to own that, because we have had the worst performing economy for years and our budget is through the roof.
Katie, I think the coronavirus, everyone understands the huge economic impact it's had, even in those countries where they haven't had tight restrictions and they've allowed people to go about their daily lives more freely. They've still had a huge economic downturn.
It does have an impact, but our economy was in dire straits prior to COVID. We entered that week, we entered it with a budget blowout, and for your government to turn around and blame COVID is absolutely disingenuous. It is not true, and it's quite frankly laughable.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to buy it anyway, but just going back to your explanation about this is an acceptable date, it seems to be based on the premise that we're actually aiming to get rid of COVID completely, and once all is clear, then we're all able to go and meet each other again. And I think that is a false premise.
That's not correct, Terry, and my comments just then reiterated that we are aiming for a suppression strategy and we've got the resources in place if we do see outbreaks to respond to that. And across Australia, I think we have been amazed that we've had such low numbers.
Yeah.
We technically hit that point of eradication yesterday. That's a clinical term, and I think it's a moment to stop and acknowledge the hard work of our clinical staff right across the territory, the people that have supported them, and Territorians. But we have to accept that without a cure, without a vaccine, as we ease restrictions, there will be cases of coronavirus, and we're ready to respond.
Yeah, but you know, we've got a terrible situation. As you know, we've got the economic problem that is going to be with us for a very long time. We've now got families who will go and visit families in South Australia, but they can't reciprocate. So we'll lose people during this period. We put up some really sensible mechanisms and protocols where you could begin to ease restrictions and have, you know, grey nomads coming to visit us. You know, there could be, and we talked about that a month ago. But Leah's dead right. We're going to miss a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, really, and that is when those millions, 5.5 million who travel overseas could be attracted to the territory. Now Queensland's going to market
And this is the thing. I think we're definitely, we've missed the jump on those other states. SA's definitely, you know, definitely got the jump on everybody. I think there is still some concern, though, from Territorians that they're happy enough to be opening up to South Australia and Western Australia, but whether they're entirely happy to be opening up to all of those other states that still have some issues in terms of COVID.
In particular, Victoria, I think, is the concern at the moment. And the last thing that we would want would be to have, you know, someone travel up from Victoria, you know, with coronavirus, infect someone in a remote community, you had an outbreak that could be disastrous. So you see the difficult game that they're playing. Oh, the one thing that's concerned me about this whole thing is that we've been told the whole way along that the government's decisions are being based on the health advice. And I think what transpired at the Public Accounts Committee yesterday was a bit of a worry because Hugh Heggie has been really difficult, I think, for people to
track
down. I mean, I personally haven't been trying to speak to him, but speaking to you and speaking to Kathleen, you know, he's the man we want to hear from.
Absolutely.
If we're relying on the advice of the Chief Health Officer, then we need to speak to the Chief Health Officer.
And to add to that, Matt, in every other state, you do see the Chief Health Officer
every single day. You see Brett Sutton and Annalise Van Diemen in Victoria. We all know their names now. We see them that regularly. And Hugh Heggie, you know, seems to be in witness protection. Now, he came out, he was at the Public Accounts Committee yesterday, and the reason we need to hear from him is that we're getting conflicting information from our political leaders about what his advice is. Now, Leah yesterday morning said that she'd had a briefing with Hugh Heggie earlier this week, and based on that briefing, she had come up with a policy that she believed it was safe to open the borders on June 22. Michael Gunner does a press conference 2 hours later and says that we're opening the borders on July 17 on the advice of the Chief Health Officer. Then at the Public Accounts Committee, it appears that Hugh Heggie indicated that it was safe to open the borders now and then backtracked on that information when he was sort of in some sort of conversation with the Chief Minister.
Well, I mean, I asked this of you earlier in the week, Filesy, is Hugh Heggie being gagged? Are we in a situation where we're not able to hear from the Chief Health Officer because there's been a directive from the government for him to not be out speaking each day?
Absolutely not. In terms of what the information coming through and the roles of these people, and we've got the Chief Health Officer and we've got the Deputy Chief Health Officers that support him, and they're working massive hours. They're working huge days, 14, 16-hour days. It's an incredible amount of pressure.
As are the Chief Health Officers in the other states who are still able to do a 30 to 60-minute briefing for the public every single day. I don't understand. Like, surely today Hugh Heggie needs to come out and hold a press conference to tell us what's actually going on here.
So he provided at the Public Accounts Committee, he was there yesterday, answered any questions from the opposition parties and to the committee that he could. So in terms of the coronavirus, we've listened...
Do you think he should come out today and hold a press conference? Do you think Hugh Heggie needs to come out and speak publicly? Do you think that would be the right thing
to do? That would be a good
idea. He was available yesterday. He was at the Public Accounts Committee hearing.
A media conference for the media to speak to him and for the public to be able able to hear what he's got to say.
The requests for this media go through the public information group. There is no political pressure for him to speak or to not speak. It is a decision for him to make, and we support him in that. In terms of the information, it is very clear. And this decision, you know, it's great for Leah and Terry to say, we'd open the borders immediately, we'd open them on the 22nd, but we have to have the responsibility. It's not, you know, all care and no responsibility when you're in government.
Well, but this is the whole point. I think at the moment, the public and many people are feeling as though this is becoming a political decision. It's and you know, that the Chief Minister is a little bit drunk on power here, enjoying the fact that he's keeping everybody hanging on every word. That's certainly some of the commentary from some members opposite me and some of the people within the community, where
Katie,
he's quite enjoying getting out at those press conferences and telling people, well, no, we're making the tough decisions, but he doesn't actually have the Chief Health Officer there with him explaining why those decisions are being made. And I think that that's the incredibly important part here, is that Territorians actually want to be able to hear from the Chief Health Officer. We understand that you guys are our elected officials and we've all chosen the people that we want to represent us. But when we're talking about a health crisis, one would think that you're able to hear from those medical professionals who we are getting advice from, so that you can actually, they're in a position then where they can communicate that to Territorians, so we really understand why those decisions are being made. Not from the Chief Minister. No disrespect to the Chief Minister, but we actually need to hear from someone who's a medical professional.
Katie, these are really difficult decisions, and there is no roadmap. There is no perfect plan to, when we were faced with coronavirus just a few short months ago, we were predicting that huge numbers of ICU beds that we would need, deaths that we would need. I never thought we'd be in a position here in June with absolutely no cases and hitting that clinical definition. So we've had a plan in terms of making sure that we have measures in place, abiding by those clinical, physical distancing, those principles around health, to get the Territory to hear, and we'll follow that through. There's lots of different views and we're happy to listen to those, but the advice we listen to is that of Hugh Heggie and the Chief Health and Deputy.
So why don't we get to get that advice firsthand? At the beginning of this crisis, we were hearing from Di Stevens pretty much every day, you and Di Stevens, yeah. And then all of a sudden at some point it changed and it was just the Chief Minister giving all the information. And unlike everywhere else in the country, this is the one place where the Chief Health Officer is not coming out and giving the information. Nationally, you see Paul Kelly or you see Nick, yep, Coatsworth, or you see Brendan Murphy almost every day on the television giving an update. In same in Victoria, same in New South Wales, same in Queensland, just not in the Northern Territory. The impression from the outside seems to be that there has been some kind of gag put on the Chief Health Officer by the government because it wants to control all of the messaging.
And when I was asking these questions of the Chief Health Officer yesterday in the Public Accounts Committee hearing, Natasha, you were busy scrawling away almost like you were writing him some sort of note talk points, you know? I mean, it's very confusing messaging that's coming out, and Territorians want
confusing.
To know.
We have been quite clear all the way through coronavirus pandemic in the Northern Territory with the information we've shared, the timeframes, the steps, and when you point to South Australia and say people want to go and visit there, they can't even go to a restaurant with more than 10 people. They can't play a game of pool. They can't go to the footy and watch it with people. And so, you know, every jurisdiction is different, and we've done what we believe is the best for Territorians. We're in a very unique situation, and Territorians will judge us on that.
And this jurisdiction's pretty odd because we don't have clear information from the Chief Health Officer. It's confusing. And the Chief Minister said when he came to government, his primary objective was to build trust in government. So we don't have clarity around that. We've mixed messages. I think Mr. Heggie needs to come out and clear that up so that we can, as a community, have some trust.
Highly clinically trained, and what you're doing is you are questioning their decisions.
No,
they have put out their options.
We're seeking clinically trained. That's why we want to hear from them, because
and
they're the ones who are highly clinically
trust
trained
in the government.
To give us the actual health advice, not give us the political advice. We want the health advice. Leah says that her briefing with the Chief Health Officer earlier this week says that it's okay to open the borders on June 22. Now, if that's the case, we need to be able to ask him about that. People want to know, is that the health advice? Or for is the health advice that the borders still need to stay closed until the 17th of July.
And as I was saying, secondly, firstly, I think people are becoming increasingly aware it's 22nd of August is the dominant governing number in the Chief Minister's mind, because we have lack of clarity around the advice that's been provided regarding the opening of the borders. We have a lack of clarity. We have a lack of clarity. Because there's mixed messages. Well, you just missed some of this conversation.
I mean, secondly, the messages. There's quite a clear path to reopening.
It was very unclear yesterday.
Can I get to the second point is that we're going to an election and you are muting the information that's flowing regarding the budget. We have the end of the financial year. We won't have even the fiscal data for us to make a reasonable decision. Now, why don't we hear plain and simple at the end of the financial year from Treasury? So we have mixed messages regarding whether it's safe or not to open the borders. Mm-hmm. We don't have adequate information regarding the financial position of the Northern Territory. We won't shift the date August the 22nd. Who's in control here? It appears to be the Chief Minister managing these events to his own personal interests.
Well, and look, I want to point out right away that nobody in any way, shape or form is being critical of the way that our wonderful public servants and our wonderful health professionals have acted in this situation. In fact, my hat goes off to you know, to all of those involved in every way, shape or form. But this is the criticism, and the criticism is everybody has put in requests to speak to the Chief Health Officer on numerous occasions. Now, I'm not criticising the fact that he hasn't come out. I'm criticising the fact that I feel as though, and I'm happy to be corrected, and I did ask you about this, Farsi, I feel as though the government is stopping Hugh Heggie from coming out and speaking to the wider public because they want to. The Chief Minister wants to be the one who is monitoring and delivering exactly what message is delivered. Now, where I think that gets unfair is when you've got the public asking a number of health-related questions, and they're not questions that are political, they're questions that are regarding health, that they want to be able to put to those health professionals. Now, you can say all you want about the media, you can say that, you know, Mix doesn't like this political party or the ABC likes this one, Sky News doesn't like that one. But what we do is represent the voices of our community and those that listen and watch and hear our news. They are asking these questions and they're not able to get them answered by our health professionals.
And the questions are being answered. The information is available. There's a process, the public information group, where the media can contact. I think the fact that Leah had a briefing with the Chief Health Officer, the Chief Executive of Department of Health, the Territory Controller, which is the Police Commissioner, have made themselves available. And Terry just laughs there. And it's great when you're in opposition or not quite opposition, can't work that out. But in terms of these people, these are public servants and they have gone through something that none of them would have predicted, that none of them planned for, and they have done an amazing job. So I think it is a little bit disrespectful to be critical. The information
is
there.
That's
all
the point.
They're critical of the government. They're critical of the Chief Minister.
We just simply want one question answered, and the answer is the question is this: is it true that Hugh Heggie's advice, as he originally gave to the Public Accounts Committee yesterday, is that it is safe to open the borders today?
So his advice is that we've hit a point where it is safe to consider the borders, and a 28-day, which is two replications of coronavirus, of COVID-19, is the point that we should open our borders. That is his clear advice. He said it yesterday.
I'm reading from the NT Independent. Asked this afternoon if the Public Accounts Committee hearing, if the NT's borders were safe to open immediately, Dr. Heggie confirmed he believed they were. Yes, I do, Mr. Heggie responded. Is that
he has said
they're safe to open now.
And he has said, and this is where I think Leah is a little bit unfair, because she knows in that briefing he says yes, but you need to have a 28-day replication cycle before you do so.
Okay.
So
all right.
Safe.
We might take a short break. We've gotten a bit bogged down there, but, you know, rightly so. I mean, this is something that people are talking about. Even yesterday we had a number of people message through and say, Katie, are you able to speak to the Chief Health Officer? We want to hear what he's got to say about the borders. So it's not something that's being made up. It's not something that we're pulling out of thin air. It's something that people certainly are asking for, and we'll continue to put those requests in.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
It is Friday morning. It is The Week That Was. Plenty of text messages coming through on the text line. We have got Leah Finocchiaro, Terry Mills, Natasha Files and Matt Cunningham in the studio. I've got one here from Mark in Tiwi. It says, hi, Katie. The problem with Gunner is he wants to be seen as the only focus during this time. It's not good enough. There is a lot of messages. There's one here, 2,000 people went to a footy game down south. It's wrong. We shouldn't be opening the borders to everyone. Why the heck would we want to open the borders to Victoria is one of those messages. Another one here from Wen in Noonee, and she says, has Gunner lost the plot completely? Yes, open the borders, but only to South Australia and WA at this stage, hey? He must wait till eastern states are also clear of the virus. All the hard work of protecting us gone down the drain. There is a lot to read out, lots of messages. I won't read them all out now. We'll get on to our next topic. And well, Matt Cunningham, you've been covering all throughout the week the situation with Senator Sam McMahon. It's been on the front page a few days this week. We now know that police are investigating an alleged altercation between CLP Senator Sam McMahon and her taxpayer-funded Chief of Staff, Jason Riley. Look, there's a lot of detail that really we can't go into at this point, but it's certainly a difficult situation, no doubt about it.
Oh, absolutely, Katie, and I think it's a bit of a disaster for the CLP, and, you know, the timing of it's pretty bad as well. You know, there are people within the CLP who are obviously working very hard to get to the bottom of exactly what's going on and what's gone on, but I think what's obvious is that there have been some serious issues within that office for some time. And I don't know where it's all going to end. At the moment, it's just a rather probably sad and disappointing situation. And, and I think that it's certainly at this stage not doing the CLP's election prospects come August
Seen, you know, the sideshow of that is the fact that that Senator Sam McMahon's electoral officer, Mel Usher, is now going to be running for Territory Alliance. Terry, you were down in Katherine earlier in the week, and the community had put her forward as being a person who should represent them.
Yeah, and this, though it could easily be seen as a direct consequence of the issues that Matt's just talking about, but it's not. It's coincidental. There has been disquiet within the CLP branch down there for other reasons, not related to Sam McMahon. Getting closer to the situation too, I get this sense that Sam McMahon, the senator, has been fairly quiet in all of this, and I suspect she's not going to be quiet much longer because she feels, I think, well, the community, I would say, have a sense that there is some injustice here in the way this is being managed. So it's a separate matter from Mel Usher making that decision, to be frank, because there was a controversy around the pre-selection process that sat behind all of this. And from my point of view, it was a simple matter of a community saying, we feel that we've been forgotten. We don't have much choice coming to the Territory election. And could you find somebody for us? And I said, no, it's your business. So you find somebody. So they scouted around and they tapped Mel on the shoulder.
Have you had any discussions with Sam McMahon, Terry? Is there any chance that she will leave the CLP and come to Territory Alliance?
No, I haven't had any chance, any chats with Sam, and I don't think it's frankly possible for her to come and join Territory Alliance, nor would that you know, be considered because, you know, she is a CLP senator and elected as a CLP senator.
Yeah, but she could quite easily, I mean, as a senator, you're free to quit your party and join another one. Corey Bernardi quit the Liberal Party and started his own Australian Conservatives. It's happened before. We've seen it with a lot of Clive Palmer's MPs as well. So.
well, anything...
I don't know if I'd take my advice from him.
Anything is possible, I guess, but that they are matters that I'm not particularly interested in. I'm particularly interested in, though, that resolving this for the sake of the community.
Would you be open to having her join Territory Alliance if she was interested in leaving the CLP and coming on board?
I'd have to say no. I don't think that would be the right thing to do. You know, what we're trying to do is to sort of get some order to the way that politics works in the Northern Territory. This is a matter for the CLP to resolve and for Senator McMahon to come to her own decision on. I think probably the best option for her would be to consider whether she wants to be associated with the CLP and perhaps join the National Party.
Well, Leah, are you annoyed by the whole sideshow that's going on at the moment?
Look, we have Jo Hersey in Katherine, and she is an amazing candidate. Jo has lived in that community for decades. She is a small business owner, and she has been out on the ground working very, very hard since September. It's important in elections that there is a contest, and now there will be another candidate in Katherine, and that, you know, can only be a good thing for a democracy. But, Jo Hersey is a terrific candidate in Katherine. She won our pre-selection. She has been on the ground working hard every single day.
Did she win that pre-selection fairly? Because there's been quite a bit of speculation that Mal Usher was dudded, for want of a better word, in that Katherine pre-selection process.
Look, as an elected member, I can't be involved in pre-selection, but that is just simply not the case, and you'd have to defer to Ron Kelly for more detail on that. But, you know, our processes are fair, our processes are open, and Jo is our pre-selected candidate. She's been out working very, very hard. People in Katherine need a strong voice, and it's really important that, Jo continue to show the people of Katherine what the CLP has to offer. We're very focused on the future, on jobs, on community safety, and they're all the issues that are important to people in Katherine. So Jo will continue to fight the good fight and seek to represent the people of Katherine in our parliament.
We've tried all week to get Ron Kelly on the show to talk about some of these issues and really, you know, I guess make it a situation where you're not then the one who's out having to talk about it because they are party issues. Are we in a situation here where the CLP is just up to the same old, you know, the same old scenario as what was the case before?
Absolutely not, Katie. When you look at my team, we are all new. I'm the only elected member going forward. We have the most incredible candidates right across the territory. We've got, you know, the Mayor of Alice Springs. We've got the Mayor of the Barkly region. We've got Tracy Hayes in Fanny Bay, Toby George in Port Darwin, Joe and Katherine. We just have incredible candidates, no matter where you look, right across the territory, who are connected to their community, who are focused and working hard. Our policies reflect the fact that Territorians want to see urgent action on our economy. They want to see urgent action on crime, and they want the territory to be a great place where other people want to live again. That is our focus going forward, and nothing will distract us from that goal.
Meanwhile, back in Katherine, there is an observation I make, as though the CLP may sort of characterise this, that we've come in and done something. It's actually a vacuum had formed, and into that vacuum has come a voice of the community who said that we want to support another candidate. Good on them, and we support them doing so. But a number of the executive of the CLP have now moved and are now going to be supporting Mal Usher. So that's a significant issue. But I think there's another issue. Where's the Labor Party candidate?
Oh, well, I got sent a Firthy yesterday saying that, what's that young bloke's name? Yeah, that he was going to be running, and I said that on air. I said, I do need to check that, though, with the Labor president. But no, I don't think that Dom is running.
And I was good. I was just, when you guys form a coalition and you work out who's going to be, the leader and the deputy leader, at least your executive split. So, but no, the Labor Party's put out a call for nominations for candidates in the Katherine region.
Yep.
We'll see who puts their hand up and comes forward.
There are some very astute political observers who would say that, that Terry and Leah, if you guys can sort out, if the CLP and Territory Alliance could sort out some differences, not to join, but to at least preference each other, that then you'd be a real threat to the Labor Party.
Yeah, well, could be, but I tell you what, the Labor Party is sort of trying to create this scenario that we're splitting the Conservative vote. Meanwhile, we're actually coming after Labor because there needs to be a change. And I'm not going to buy into this, and I think Territorians should buy into it for a moment, that this idea of all the Conservative guys are on one side and we're sort of splitting that little pool and the Labor Party are all by themselves over there. Nuh-uh. Territory Alliance is coming straight after Labor.
Are you both coming after? Like, are you coming after
no,
together?
No, the CLP is coming after Territory Alliance, but we're going after Labor.
Honestly,
pull
your violin out. Seriously, Terry, we have always made Labor our focus. You've spent 3.5 years worrying about us.
You're doing the Justin Bye election. You put them second.
We will work with like-minded independents, political parties, candidates, whatever it might be. That has always been on the table.
Well,
that is always our position.
Party in the Johnston
I think this is where people start to really get the shits with politics, when things like that happen. And they think, well, hang on a sec, I wouldn't actually have an issue with, you know, with Terry and Leah preferencing each other because, you know, I agree with some of the things that, you know, that the Territory Alliance say, and I agree with some of the things that the CLP say. And they may choose the candidate that they like the best, you know, as a normal person. And that's not, you know, heavily involved in politics. But then when you have a situation where, you know, where Terry, you're preferencing the Greens and Leah, you're preferencing Labor, I think that's when people go, well, hang on a sec, what exactly are your values?
Johnston was an isolated by-election. The Country Liberals went to Territory Alliance to discuss preferences. They'd already done a deal with the Greens, who are anti everything that we believe in. The options were thin on the ground for Johnston in terms of preferencing. We went with a simple down-the-page model.
Oh, yes, sweet.
And that's how it panned out. We have always said we will work with Territory Alliance. Will they work with us? That's the question.
Maybe we can sort this out. Will you work with us? Leah's saying it now.
Always,
Terry, how are you feeling about this? Leah's saying that she's prepared to work with you guys.
There's been absolutely no change. The focus is on changing the government and getting rid of Labor.
But you're going to, you know, let's be honest here. You guys are going to need to work together to do that.
I'll work that out later.
I actually think voters want to know.
I think they
want to know before they go to the poll. I mean, there'll be a certain amount of sort of not particularly well-engaged voters who probably don't care that much. But a lot of voters will want to know whether a vote for Territory Alliance, you know, if their candidate doesn't get over the line, translates into a vote for the CLP or a vote for Labor, and likewise with the CLP. I think that surely at some point you guys need to go public on whether you're going to...
I have said our position. Territory Alliance want to be all things to all people. They're the ideology free party that has Delia Laurie as their chief advisor, that has Jeff Collins, an exiled Labor member, but also then CLP members. I mean, they are a different proposition for Territorians. The CLP is out there working hard. We want to win government in our own right. Our candidates are out every single day talking about jobs, safety and opportunity, talking about what we need to do to grow our economy and tackle crime. And that is our focus. Labor have always been our focus for 4 years, and they will be our focus right to the end.
Yeah, well, there you go. So you were talking about the preferences, this sort of concocted story about, you know, we preference the Greens. Well, every box had to be filled. We preference the minor parties, put Labor last and CLP second last, and backed ourselves. That's a good reason. There is no explanation for CLP.
How is that a good reason?
Choosing Labor as number two, and then working with Labor to make sure that you retain opposition status.
Oh, what rubbish.
All right. 360's The Week That Was for BTC Construction.
We have got Leah Finocchiaro, Terry Mills, Natasha Files and Matt Cunningham in the studio. Now, there is quite a few messages coming through on the text line. I'll read a couple of these out. Hi, Katie. Hugh Heggie, there is a difference between horse's mouth and hearsay. That one there from Craig Imwanelli. There's one here. Exactly, Matt. I want to know where my vote will go, as I definitely don't want it going to Labor. Terry, if you want a person to vote for you, you need to get off your high horse and start really thinking of what you're going to do for the Northern Territory, says that texter. There's one here that says, hey, Katie, we are continuously being told that these decisions are based on Hugh Heggie's suggestions, but we never hear that from his mouth. Please, Files, give him a voice so that he's able to come out and talk. There's so many here. Sorry, panel, but the open the borders is purely about the government ensuring they get re-elected around the supposed COVID performance. At the end of the day, what is the plan to get the Territory out of being insolvent, of which the majority was pre-COVID, just a really concerned voter and taxpayer? And I do want to talk about government debt and also the unemployment rate. Now, just firstly, we know that it is being reported today in the paper that the government has admitted that it's plunging the Territory into hundreds of millions of dollars of extra debt, yet in line with the Chief Minister's secretive attitude is what's being said. Questions remain over what our actual fiscal and debt position is. Sorry, this is Leah. This is actually your press release. I do apologise.
Oh, that's Jennifer Miller.
Jesus Christ!
My press release is out. Well,
every territorian deserves to feel safe.
We are taking the best health advice. We will not apologise for saving lives.
This is a live read brought to you by Leah Finocchiaro and the
Amber, for Spill It.
Keep reading my release. It's much more interesting.
So that is part of Leah's press release. But then I want to take you to a story in the NT News, re the unemployment rate. And this is concerning because the unemployment rate has soared to levels unseen for 16 years. But the business peak body warns that it could get worse once our JobKeeper is taken away in September. Now, I know that I've sort of moulded two issues there into one, but I think that they actually are. You know, we've got a situation where our economy is not performing well, and it wasn't prior to COVID-19. There's no doubt about that. There's certainly been questions raised about the handling of the Northern Territory's budget and how our books are looking at this point. And then in amongst that, the biggest issue of all, and that is Territorians being out of work. Yep. And I think that that's the thing that is most concerning to everybody out there listening. We obviously are all concerned about the budget. We're concerned about the economy, but the ramifications of those things not being managed well are obviously the fact that we end up with people who do not have jobs.
And this is people's lives, Katie. We know 5,000 people have lost their jobs and over 10,000 are looking for work. That's why strong leadership from the Chief Minister around our economy is important. And instead, what we've seen is all this rubbish coming out of the government's mouth trying to blame COVID for the problems that we have had for a very long time. And of course, we've got the Reconstruction Commission, which is essentially the Gunner government devolving its cabinet responsibilities to an external group of people, all who are eminently qualified, but he's asking them to do his job for him. What came out of the Public Accounts Committee yesterday, you could have knocked me over with a feather. Not only has the Gunner government given the Reconstruction Commission its responsibility to come back to the government and tell them how to grow our economy, mind you, that report does not come in until November, but also now the Reconstruction Commission are going out to Territorians and asking them how to fix this problem. It is unbelievable, Katie. Why do we need another group of people to tell the government how to do its job, and then Territorians to have to try and solve the problem to tell the Reconstruction Commission what they need to do so that they can in November go back and tell the Gunner government? There needs to be strong action now. I have made three very clear commitments around simplifying mining tax, streamlining approvals processes by 50%, and creating an Office of Territory Coordinator. They are all things the Chief Minister can do with a stroke of a pen. He is the Chief, he has the power, and instead he is pushing this down the track, taking no decisive action and doing nothing until November.
Katie, it's not as simple as ticking three boxes. In terms of the Economic Reconstruction Committee, they've made a decision to go out to that consultation. My understanding is it does not impact the timeframe. So there is a draft report due at the end of July and then that final report in November. In terms of Territorians and jobs, we absolutely know that many Territorians are doing it tough. I was at a local business earlier this week who took the time to show me around their business and share their stories. They're on JobKeeper, everyone there, and they're very grateful for the federal government in this space, but they are nervous, around
Absolutely.
What's happening around the corner. In terms of, we've thrown out the door $400 million in stimulus, losing revenue so that we can keep people in jobs
but
in the territory.
But that's all you know how to do is spend money. You've actually made no one's life better. We've got $5 billion more debt since your government came to power, and whose life is
make
better because of it?
Make my backyard a bit better.
You have not cut payroll tax. You have pushed payroll tax down the road so that people have to pay for it later. You know, you cannot just keep throwing money at this issue. At some point, you have to grow our economy. The size of the pie needs to be bigger, and you can't just keep spending us into oblivion.
Just on that, we also heard on the show on Monday morning, Chief Minister Michael Gunner was on the show, and I asked him the status of the Western Hotel down at the waterfront, and also asked him the status of Project Sea Dragon. Now, these are two projects that the government certainly hung their hats on and have touted as being some big job creators for the territory. Now, they've both been significantly delayed. At this point in time, Project Sea Dragon, we received a statement from their managing director saying that they are still trying to raise that funding. It's not going through the NAIF, from what I can gather. They're not discussing that with the NAIF at this point, or those discussions have ceased. I don't have the statement in front of me. But then the Western, I am starting to question whether that hotel's even going to happen.
Yeah, this I think points to a real problem. I thought we were, you know, government was going to get past this. The problem in the Territory is this boom and bust cycle and that sort of faith in big projects. And those big projects seem to be evaporating and there is nothing else. Perhaps there's fracking, but when you actually have a close look at fracking, which government has made a position clear on, when you look at those numbers, they aren't particularly significant either.
So is Territory Alliance now opposed to fracking?
Well, there's an economic story that needs to be considered there, but I wanted to go back to the
But that's a big issue. I don't understand the question.
Because you've always supported the onshore gas industry, Terry.
It would on seem, economic grounds.
It would seem odd if you changed that position 2 months out from the election.
No, but my position is that there is this belief in major projects, and we have to have an honest look at the major project sort of mentality of the Northern Territory. And I agree with Leah that there needs to be a higher level of coordination that is directed to smaller business and agriculture, horticulture, so that we can begin to grow the economy of the Northern Territory.
I think all of that's right, but on the specific issue of fracking, I mean, surely you either are in support of the onshore gas industry and support of fracking, or you are opposed to it. I mean, the Greens, their position is absolutely clear.
Yep.
They oppose it absolutely 100 every step of the way, same as the party formerly known as One Territory.
Yep.
I think people want to know, with Territory Alliance, I saw the quote this week that said, we support fracking, but we're not enthusiastic about it. I think that confuses people. I think it's like,
well,
you can't be half pregnant.
That's right.
Are you either on board with this or are you opposed to it?
Well, the situation is that we have, as a territory, inherited a decision that's already been made.
Oh.
The real issue is sovereign risk.
What a cop-out. What decision would you make, Terry? Gas or no gas?
The issue here is there is sovereign risk exposure for the Northern Territory if it were to be banned outright. That's a fact.
And is that the only reason that you don't support?
Secondly, there needs to be a proper assessment of the economic benefits that would flow to the Northern Territory.
But isn't that what Territory. The Pepper report... Didn't that look into
the
those...
The Acil Allen report.
It did. Yeah. OK, yeah. Yep.
But when you have another look at it, you'll see that there's only, in a 25-year scenario, perhaps at a middle-level benefit would be 250 jobs.
So how do you think that we're going to... How would you manage the economy out of this if we're not going to look to the gas industry?
Well, there is 17 mines that have stalled, rare earths and all kinds of projects that have great potential for the Northern Territory. And I think we need to turn our attention to some of those sort of projects and get them moving. We're able to get an IMPEX out of the ground with all the sort of processes that we have in place. But if we could turn our attention to some of the potential that the Northern Territory has and turn that into reality, I think we would have some real benefit.
Gas is part of that story,
though.
Gas is part of that story.
I'm not saying gas is not a part of the story, but we've got to be realistic. Since the Pepper inquiry, there has been a massive change to the world market in terms of gas, and there has been an increased interest in renewables.
And the short-term economics of gas definitely have dropped off, but long-term people are saying that price will eventually bounce back. And people probably need to know from you, Terry, whether you are committed to the onshore gas industry as part of the Northern Territory's future, or whether you are with the Greens and you are taking a position where you say, we don't think fracking should happen in the Northern Territory for XXX and X reason.
Yeah, that's right, and that position will be made clear.
So at the moment, it's still undecided.
Well, I think this is the conversation. It's about the economics and making sure that the Northern Territory is not putting its faith in the major projects.
But it's a pretty big if there, Terry, for people out there listening, because you had previously been saying that you were supportive of it. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that you'd even written an article in the paper about the positive impact that industry could have for the Northern Territory.
Well, this is what you get with an ideology-free party. You get this flip-flopping around. They're not backing themselves into something. They want to be all things to all people. You know, industry now more than ever, and our economy now more than ever, needs certainty. And you criticise Michael Gunner for being political on borders and political with COVID. Well, you are being political with gas.
We're going to have to...
I wouldn't say so. I think, you know, a government has to manage risk, and there has been increased risk emerging around the economics of this project or this possibility. And I think government should be getting ahead of the game and basing its thinking on the premise that what if it is actually a fizzer? What is if it's another big project? that is, it's a promising to change the future of the Northern Territory. What happens if it is a fizzer? Where should government go then? These are the sorts of conversations
we're
going to
have to take
have.
A very short break.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
We got a bit carried away there. We don't have much time left to talk to wrap things up for this morning. But a couple of more messages coming through. Actually, Terry, I've got one here asking you if you are going to be speaking with Rose Watts, the former candidate for Port Darwin, to join Territory Alliance.
Oh, is that a question that
I've got? Yes, it was. I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, she's a nice lady. I'll have a chat with her any time.
There you go. Well, that is just about it for us this morning. Leah Finocchiaro, the opposition leader. Always great to have you in the studio. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And just a reminder, Palmerston Markets has started again.
Oh, yes.
And
how
it was
did they
lovely.
Go last week?
It was really good last yep. week. So please, come on down.
Yeah. Oh, good stuff. Terry Mills, the Territory Alliance leader.
Palmerston Markets. And it was funny. You know, the other, it was sort of like short notice. It started up. People walk around and said, oh, it's not many people here tonight. They said that in the next minute.
Yeah.
No, there was heaps. It was packed all night, right till 9 o'clock.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Natasha Files, the Attorney General, thank you for your time this morning.
Thanks, Wolfie.
And Matt Cunningham from Sky News.
I'm looking forward to our photo at the end of this without practicing social distancing.
Oh,
be sure.
Yeah.
Palmerston Markets rally last weekend with 1,000 people in the city.
Get ready. I'm going to put my arm around all of you.
We'll go take it outside.
Oh, thank you all so much for your time this morning. Call Mix 104.9's 360.